Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Blog Talk Radio, Marketing Pulpit International, New York edition with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman. 66 degrees here in Brooklyn on a partly sunny day. Threatens to rain the rest of the week, and we could really use the rain. I know that my plants, which were in a state of dying, could certainly use the moisture. Well, tonight's the night, folk. Hillary Rodham Clinton and Donald John Trump are squaring off for their first debate, which is going to be aired at CNN at 9 o'clock. So everybody is basically fending for front row seats. I mean, the press is like they can't wait. This threatens to also be one of the highest rated, one of the highest watched in terms of Nielsen ratings programs ever, whether it's sports or strict entertainment. You know, because we want to see, and a lot of people want to see, what exactly Mr. Trump is going to do. By the way, let me discuss a little housekeeping here. Our board is not working. We reached out to the executive producer. He has not deigned to contact us, and we have no way of getting in contact with Blog Talk Radio. So the only way that impacts us is that we cannot do our breaks because obviously we have no way to control our board. And this is typical for Blog Talk Radio. We had a very important interview some months back, Carl McCall, Chancellor of the State University of New York, my alma mater. And Blog Talk cut us off in the middle of the interview. It was outrageous. And absolutely no apology, no concession, no nothing from anyone. And so that air check was basically ruined. So we're extraordinarily annoyed, but just bear with us. Things happen. You know, glitches happen. Certainly, however, we would expect that, you know, a professionally run operation would have redundant systems able to go to those systems in the event they want to work maintenance, updates, patches, whatever on their primary system, not just, you know, work on that system while folks are trying to produce their shows. That doesn't make a lot of sense, at least from a radio perspective, Barry. So at any rate, back to the campaign. So the New York Times has a rather long piece. You know, frankly, I thought that it would have been a stronger piece against Trump. It's an editorial board piece, which means that it was written by multiple people. And a single editor probably formed it into a cogent story. But it is entitled Why Donald Trump Should Not Be President. And the subtitle, Donald Trump is a Man Who Dwells in Bigotry, Bluster, and False Promises, by the editorial board, September 25th, 2016. Let's take a read. This is extremely interesting. When Donald Trump began his improbable run for president 15 months ago, he offered his wealth and television celebrity as credentials, then slyly added a twist of fear-mongering about Mexican rapists flooding across the southern border. From that moment of combustion, it became clear that Mr. Trump's views were matters of dangerous impulse and cynical pandering rather than thoughtful politics. Yet he has attracted throngs of Americans who ascribe higher purpose to him than he has demonstrated in a freewheeling campaign marked by bursts of false and outrageous allegations, personal insults, xenophobic nationalism, unapologetic sexism, and positions that shift according to his audience and his whims. Now, here stands Mr. Trump, feisty from his runaway Republican primary victories and ready for the first presidential debate scheduled for Monday night with Hillary Clinton. It is time for others who are still undecided and perhaps hoping for some dramatic change in our politics and governance to take a hard look and see Mr. Trump for who he is. They have an obligation to scrutinize his supposed virtues as a refreshing counter-politician. Otherwise, they could face the consequences of handing the White House to a man far more consumed with himself than with the nation's well-being. Here's how Mr. Trump is selling himself and why he can't be believed. Despite his towering properties, Mr. Trump has a record rife with bankruptcies and sketchy ventures like Trump University, which authorities are investigating after numerous complaints of fraud. His name has been chiseled off his failed casinos in Atlantic City. Mr. Trump's brazen refusal to disclose his tax return, as Ms. Clinton and other nominees for decades have done, should sharpen voter wariness of his business and charitable operations. Disclosure would undoubtedly raise red flags. The public record already indicates that in at least some years, he made full use of available loopholes and paid no taxes. Mr. Trump has been opaque about his questionable global investments in Russia and elsewhere, which could present conflicts of interest as president, particularly if his business interests are left in the hands of his children, as he intends. Investigations have found self-dealing. He notably tapped $258,000 in donors' money from his charitable foundation to settle lawsuits involving his for-profit businesses, according to the Washington Post. A straight talker who tells it like it is, Mr. Trump, who has no experience in national security, declares that he has a plan to soundly defeat the Islamic State militants in Syria, but won't reveal it, bobbing and weaving about whether he would commit ground troops. Voters cannot judge whether he has any idea what he's talking about without an outline of his plan. Yet Mr. Trump ludicrously insists he must not tip off the enemy. Another of his cornerstone proposals is campaign pledge of a total and complete shutdown of Muslim newcomers, plus the deportation of 11 million undocumented immigrants across the border wall paid for by Mexico, has been subjected to endless qualifications as he zigs and zags in pursuit of middle ground voter. Or whatever his gyrations, Mr. Trump always does make clear where his heart lies with the anti-immigrant, nativist, and racist signals that he has scurrilously employed to build his base. He used the shameful birther campaign against President Obama's legacy as a wedge for his candidacy. But then he opportunistically denies his own record trolling for undecided voters by conceding that Mr. Obama was a born American. In the process, he tried to smear Ms. Clinton as the instigator of the birther canard and then fled reporters' questions. Since his campaign began, NBC News has tabulated that Mr. Trump has made 117 distinct policy shifts on 20 major issues, including 3 contradictory views on abortion in 1 8-hour stretch alone. As reporters try to pin down his contradictions, Mr. Trump has mocked him at his rallies. He said he would, quote-unquote, loosen libel laws to make it easier to sue news organizations that displease him. An expert negotiator can fix government and overpower other world leaders. His plans for cutting the national debt was far from a confidence builder. He said he might try to persuade creditors to accept less than the government owed. This fanciful notion, imparted from Mr. Trump's debt-steeped real estate world, would undermine faith in the government and the stability of global financial markets. His tax plan has been no less alarming. It was initially estimated to cost $10 trillion in tax revenue, then, after revisions, maybe $3 trillion by one advisor's estimate. There is no credible indication the house would be paid for, only assurances that those in the upper brackets will be favored. If Mr. Trump were to become president, his open doubts about the value of NATO would present a major diplomatic and security challenge, as would his repeated denunciation of trade deals and relations with China. Mr. Trump promises to renegotiate the Iran nuclear control agreement as if it were an air rights deal on Broadway. Numerous experts on national defense and international affairs have recoiled at the thought of his commanding the nuclear arsenal. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell privately called Mr. Trump, quote-unquote, an international pariah. Mr. Trump has repeatedly denounced global warming as a hoax, although a golf course he owns in Ireland is citing global warming in seeking to build a protective wall against a rising sea. In expressing admiration for the Russian President Vladimir Putin, Mr. Trump implies acceptance of Mr. Putin's dictatorial abuse of critics and dissenters, some of whom have turned up murdered, and Mr. Putin's vicious crackdown on the press. Even worse was Mr. Trump's urging Russia to meddle in the presidential campaign by hacking the email of former Secretary of State Clinton. A voter should consider the sorts of deals Mr. Putin might attain if Mr. Trump, his admirer, wins the White House. A change agent for the nation and the world? There can be little doubt of that. But voters should be asking themselves if Mr. Trump will deliver the kind of change they want. Starting a series of trade world wars is a recipe for a recession. Not for new American jobs. Blowing a hole in the deficit by cutting taxes for the wealthy will not secure Americans' financial future, and alienating our allies won't protect our security. Mr. Trump has also said he will get rid of the new national health insurance system that millions now depend on, without saying how he would replace it. The list goes on. He would scuttle the financial reforms and consumer protections born of the Great Recession. He would upend the Obama administration's progress on the environment, vowing to cancel the Paris Climate Agreement on global warming. He would return to the use of waterboarding, a torture method in violation of international treaty law. He has blithely called for the reconsideration of Japan's commitment not to develop nuclear weapons. He favors a national campaign of stop-and-frisk policing, which has been ruled unconstitutional. He has blessed the National Rifle Association's ambition to arm citizens to engage in what he imagines would be defensive shootouts with gunmen. He has so coarsened our politics that he remains a contender for the presidency despite musing about his opponent as a gunshot target. Voters should also consider Mr. Trump's silence about areas of national life that are crying out for constructive change. How would he change our schools for the better? How would he lift more Americans out of poverty? How would his condescending appeal to black voters, a cynical signal to white moderates concerned about his racist supporters, translate into credible White House initiatives to promote racial progress? How would his call to monitor and even close some mosques affect the nation's life and global reputation? Would his Supreme Court nominees be zealous, self-certain extensions of himself? In all these areas, Ms. Clinton has offered constructive proposals. He has offered bluster or nothing. The most specific domestic policy he has put forward on tax care breaks for child care would tilt towards the wealthy. Voters attracted by the force of wealth, Trump's personality should pause and take note of the precise qualities he exudes as an audaciously different politician. Bluster, savage mockery of those who challenge him, degrading comments about women, mendacity, crude generalizations about nations and religions. Our presidents are role models for generations of our children. Is this the example we want for them? That was a scathing editorial board post relative to Trump's candidacy for president of the United States. It could have been a little harsher, in my estimation, but I guess that is as far as they want to go. I suspect, however, there was some pundits saying this weekend on the various talk shows that the Times has made a calculated decision, which is virtually unheard of. You've never heard of this before, where they're going to call Trump on his untruths, and they're going to say they're going to call him for what they are, which is basically lies. And that's heartening because there has been a blowback. One of the reporters was trying to defend. I believe she was with the Times. I'm not really certain. Can't think of her name. Never heard of her before. But she, there was a lot of pushback. She was basically suggesting that newspapers, especially in the print, and also, you know, a lot of the news magazines have pushback against Trump. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, they're suggesting that his audience, his constituents, his followers don't care. And that is frightening because there is a shred of truth there that, you know, they're willing, especially disaffected whites who are afraid of losing their historic privilege in this country, they don't care. They rather push the cart off the cliff and follow behind it along with the rest of the country than to elect someone who is flawed. Hillary Clinton is demonstrably flawed. She is secretive to the point of paranoia, which often manifests in little white lies. And it's not a good quality or characteristic for our commander-in-chief to possess. But most politicians lie, and all lawyers lie. I know that for a fact. So, but in Trump's case, I mean, he's pathological in his lies and brazen, because instead of retracting when caught in a lie, Trump has just doubled down, and this is extraordinarily problematic. Then he's thin-skinned. He can dish out criticism, but he can hardly take it. And some of the comments, Hillary Clinton has, she has an advertisement up where she talks about women in the most disparaging terms. I mean, it's outrageous. I have never in my adult life heard an adult male talk about women in this way. And you would wonder what woman would be attracted to a guy harboring these type of sexist views. I mean, it's just, he called one woman, he would say, you know, tell her right to her ugly face, and called another woman, says she ate like a, I mean, it's just, you can't even repeat this stuff. So, tonight will be the night we're all hoping, you know, because Hillary Clinton is not a charismatic candidate, and she admits it herself, beyond her other issues is the fact that she lacks and we've always, and it's unfortunate, I paused because I was trying to figure out a way in which to frame this so as not to seem superficial. But we've always, especially in the African American community, have been attracted to charismatic leaders. You name the major leaders in our community. For all their flaws, and every single one of them are flawed, just like all white leaders, Asian leaders, you name it, are flawed, because they're men or women, and they come with their own baggage. But Sharpton, Jackson, Farrakhan, King, you go on and on and on, Powell, these men are all charismatic. They command a room. When they come in a room, you know that that person is there. Hillary Clinton has never had that sort of charisma. She doesn't command a room. And she has other mannerisms that people, you know, especially her detractors and seize upon to even further mitigate her effectiveness as a potential policymaker. Because she really is an extraordinarily smart person and would maintain Obama's legacy, which is part of the issue here. The other part of the issue is that every facet of our society, American society, has been corrupted from the legislative to the executive to the judiciary. The federal courts, and I rail about this all the time, has become a bastion of patronage, a patronage mill, you know, mired in mediocrity, you know, with legal hacks that should not have lifetime appointments because they haven't done anything to merit those lifetime appointments, making laws or hindering litigants from their First Amendment right, a redress for grievance. It's that simple. You know, coming back with all sorts of ludicrous, bizarre, twisted logic to deny litigants their ability to redress grievance. And a large part of this is due to partisanship. You know, the Democrats want to name in many cases, unless they're blue dog Democrats, but, you know, the average Democrat wants a progressive justice. Whereas the Republicans want a conservative justice, someone who will abide as closely to quote-unquote the Constitution as possible. So we have one, maybe two, possibly even three vacancies upcoming on the Supreme Court. There was a rumor, and I was discussing this over the weekend with someone, where in the wake of Scalia's death, Thomas said that he might consider stepping down. We would embrace that wholeheartedly. Thomas has squandered his time on the bench. I believe he's been on there for, 16 years as far. Bush Sr. appointed him, I believe. So that would have been maybe 18, 20 years ago. And he's done absolutely nothing except been a tremendous embarrassment and source of approbation, opprobrium to the Supreme Court of the United States, which is why the federal judiciary, which used to be the jewel of the American judicial system, has also become corrupt. So now in the Citizens United ruling cases is case in point. So the incoming president, whether it be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, would nominate persons to fill those vacancies. And this is a frightening prospect, if you think about it, for Donald Trump to be the one making those nominations. Now, you know, we have another problem in that, you know, there are checks and balances in the Senate, and the House would have to basically sign off on those, and they can hold them up. They have done it before. They're holding one up now, or several. President Obama has nominated Garland Merritt to the Supreme Court. You know, middle of the road justice with a stellar background. I don't know. You know, there are others that I think are much better qualified, much more progressive, much more creative in their interpretation of law. But that's who, you know, he decided to nominate, Merlin Garland. And that nomination has been held up by the Senate, who Chuck Inslee, who said that he's not going to hold hearings, which is extraordinarily disrespectful. But they've been disrespecting, you know, President Obama since he's been in office. This is not something that's unusual. And, you know, I don't want to say that he's a victim of his own choosing or that he brought a lot of it on himself. He's a deliberative cat. He never said that he was going to be this progressive that everyone characterized him to be when he became president. So anyway, back to Clinton and Trump and the Supreme Court. Everyone to a person believes and knows for a fact that that is the reason why this election is going to be that contentious. I mean, it really is. You know, and the shame of it is, yeah, I just think about it from this perspective, is that Hillary Clinton has, you know, brought a lot of this on herself. She really has. I mean, you know, you can't be almost 70 years old and not understand that, you know, that people don't trust you because you've been caught in some flagrant lie. And I'm not saying that Donald Trump doesn't lie. Forget about Donald Trump right now. Let's just deal with Hillary Clinton. I mean, you can't have a public persona and be private about it. It's a dichotomy. It's what we call cognitive dissonance. Either you're going to be very public about your private life or private about your public life. And if you decide to take either of those routes, you're going to have the sort of problems that we see with Hillary Clinton's candidacy. Because, to be frank, she should be blowing Donald Trump out of the water right now. There is absolutely no contest between them. Donald Trump is a dunce. He's ran his businesses into the ground. As a matter of fact, Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under Clinton, has a beautifully written essay about confronting a Trump supporter. And at the end of the piece, he says that, you know, Trump is a con man. But his argument, his thesis is that, you know, everybody says that Trump is so successful. But if he would have invested whatever amount of money, and he talks about this, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to find his piece, and I'm publishing it on our website, www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Again, that URL is www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net or www.eastnewyorkmanagement.com. He says if Trump would have invested the money that his father gave him and his inheritance in an index fund, he'd be worth 10 times the amount of money he is now. That's stunning. And it just, it blows over people's head. It's just incredible. So, which proves, you know, tends to support Robert Reich's argument that Trump is a failure. Because if he doesn't have, if he would have been 10 times as wealthier than he is now by simply investing the money that he gained from his father and from his inheritance in an index fund, that says it all. And that's what Reich's argument was. So it was a stunning argument. And I'm going to find that piece and definitely publish it. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk more about because it's very important for a lot of the reasons, no less the ones that I'm talking about, because whoever's nominated and confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be setting policy in this country well into when I'm elderly and hopefully not senile, but my son is middle-aged. And that's a scary prospect because we already have enough problems in this country, and we don't need further problems with a return to the discrimination or the discriminatory policies that have a lot of us, even as you know, entrepreneurs, in the position that we're in, where we're, you know, coming hat in hand, you know, begging for access to capital. So keep it tuned and come back next week for another exciting edition of Marketing Pulpit International, where yours truly, Dennis Shipman, and have a beautiful day.